You are now listening to the hottest true crime podcast in the streets.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I'm Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans.
Oh, yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, man, I'm the mailman. Can't you tell, man? Gonna post it.
What up?
Fran,
yes.
I don't know how to say it in Spanish. I remember. I was going to say, how are you doing? But I don't remember how to say that in Spanish. ¿Cómo estás?
Yeah.
¿Cómo estás? That's kind of elementary.
Yeah.
I was about to dig in a bag of some todos los tosos bien. Some shit I just heard on a George Lopez show or something. But anyway, man, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, man?
Doing good, man. I want to jump out of the gates and address this right off the bat. I am fine. I was not mauled or attacked by lions or tigers or bears or anything like this. People have figured out that I'm not a professional tracer by trade.
I think they figured that out maybe like a couple years ago, man.
Did they? Well, yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't know that it was officially there were people that like know what I do.
You came over here and said it.
Did I?
Yes.
I don't remember. You know, I come in here and I just talk, right?
Yeah.
I don't even know,
I know
most of the time what I'm saying a lot of the times. Apparently, there was a story that came out that said that there was lions escaped from a container at the Port of Baltimore. And I got messages and tags and everything on social media. I know a lot of people were joking, but some of y'all, there was no LOL or
yeah.
People were like, is this true?
Tagging out, it's in your article and shit.
Yeah. Like, look,
is that legal?
Oh, let's not get into that. I just go to work, man. I don't know what's going on in any of those containers.
Yeah, you do.
I just go to my job and I come home. I go to work and I come home.
Sure.
I don't talk to anybody about anything that's going on under the radar. That's not my area expertise. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Let's not get into what's legal and what's not legal. I can't say there aren't lions in a container somewhere right now.
True.
But they didn't get out and we're at the Port of Baltimore.
Just
that's what I can say. I can say that for sure. I can confirm that.
People.
Well, it was crazy, man. Somebody did a decent editing job on a nighttime photograph of a port and put some lions from the zoo there. And shit, it might have been real. It could have been in Lagos somewhere in Africa.
Lions.
Yeah.
The king of the jungle. Just fucking walking around.
Just walking around, bro.
That's insane.
People exist amongst lions.
Yeah, I would love to go on the safari, what is it called? Tour.
Yeah, safari tour. Yeah.
But it's dangerous, though. I mean, they're like feet away. You're in a Jeep.
And sometimes they get on the caged trucks.
Yeah.
Where you're like in a cage, but now the lion's on top of the truck.
On the hood?
On top of the cage.
Oh, shit.
Like, because you're like, it's a Humvee, so it's like the roof's cut off.
Some of them
off,
don't have that,
cage
though.
Yeah, I'm not doing that tour.
That's insane.
The tour where you're just like in a...
you're just in a Jeep.
In the Jeep, yeah, with the
it's
doors
like a convertible,
off.
Yeah.
No, kiss my ass. Never. Never in my life. They could just come up.
Yeah.
Now, if you could promise me... if you could promise me that this is just all cute safari, like, oh, giraffes and zebras, antelopes.
I doubt
if they can't guarantee that, because
yeah.
Wherever the antelopes are, there's some lions around somewhere.
Cheetahs, all kinds of shit.
Lying in wait.
Yes.
Lying in wait, if you will.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Thanks. Appreciate it. But yeah, man. No, I'm fine. I was not injured or attacked by any kind of big cats at my job. Again, I can't speak for if they are there at my job currently or in shipping containers or anything like that. I go to work and I keep my head down. Moving forward. Fran, and some real somber and sobering news. Really sad, but it feels important for us to not only address it, but speak about the societal implications of the story and also just to... you can't, as men, we can't say, because I see a lot of feedback from women where, like men or people will say, like, stay safe, ladies, or mm-hmm. watch your backs. Mm-hmm. And they go, why do we have to do that? Why is it on us to protect ourselves from creepy dudes? And the answer I kept racking my brain after hearing this story that we're about to go into, where it's like, I can't tell a guy not to be a creepy monster fucking weird. I can't be like, hey man, don't follow women and try to break into their apartment. Like I there's no warning I can say for that. All I can say is like, hey ladies, if it's a dark street, maybe don't be staring at your phone. Cause a creepy weirdo who I can't check a guy I don't know. And he, like, imagine a guy listening to this podcast and we say that and he goes, oh, wow, I was going to be a weird, creepy weirdo tonight.
Yeah.
But they said don't. So I'm going to adhere to that.
Right.
It just isn't going to happen.
No.
Right? So we can say, hey, turn your AirPods down. Maybe don't air your, you know, just little things like watch your drinks out in public, because these dudes are at home with aspirin pills practicing how to drop a pill in a cup like it's the thing where you flip the cups around and then hit the timer. Mm. There are dudes at home right now trying to practice their speed to how they could drop the pill in the cup at the bar without anybody noticing.
Yeah.
That's happening. So I can't tell you, I can't tell that guy like, hey, don't do that.
Yeah.
That's wrong. It's like, yeah, I fucking know that. That's why I'm doing
and,
it.
And it would question why you say something like that.
Who?
A man.
Yeah, like a guy you, without like, that wait, intention. What? He'd be like, what are you... Yeah. Do you do that?
Yes.
Like, it would get flipped on me immediately. Yes. Like, hey, man, look, Chesky, we're going out and have a good time. Yeah. Nobody roofie anybody tonight, okay? They'd be like, we weren't planning on it. Why are you saying that? Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm just saying, like...
They might even say that. They might go, hey, did you hear what I...
Now the rumor's on me.
Yeah.
And I don't even know. I thought I just did a public service announcement, right? But anyway, so a few days ago, a young lady named Mia Marcano went missing. Her family was... understandably, you know, really concerned, trying to get, you know, the word out there. And unfortunately, this past week, her body was discovered. It was, she was bound with duct tape, and she was found, not in her apartment, but like 20 miles away from her apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
The only suspect and the person that is presumed to be the person responsible is a man named Armando Manuel Caballero. He's 27 years old, and he was the maintenance man for the apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
He had been confronted, you told me this, he had been confronted by her parents at some point because he was sending her a lot of text messages or being too...
It was after she went missing.
They confronted him. But they knew that she had had problems with him before.
Yeah,
got it, okay. I was wondering in what way. So immediately after she went missing, the family was like, it was probably the creepy maintenance man.
Yeah.
And they went and confronted him.
And yeah, they talked to him.
Yeah, and then he proceeded to go home and commit suicide.
Yeah, they didn't have any...
no evidence.
They said the police or whatever said they didn't have enough evidence to
charge him.
To charge him or go and question him or something like that. But they was like, he had his bag and shit in his car.
Her bag
in his car. And it was like... And the video was like, it was crazy. Just to see that dude knew he did that, and he's just like denying it. And bro, we know you did it.
Oh, they filmed them confronting
it was filmed,
him?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't see that. Yeah. Wow. So obviously, Mia Marcano, absolute tragedy that she's was killed this way. And the same week that happened, I saw a TikTok of a young lady who exposed her maintenance man for taking advantage of the fact that he's the maintenance man.
Mm-hmm.
And has numbers of people in the building and used that access to hit on her and then made jokes about like, oh, I just walked past your apartment building. I'm about to come in. And she's like, please don't do that. Yeah. I'll call the police.
Yeah.
Like in his mind, he thought that was being flirtatious and she was playing hard to get or some kind of weird shit. And these are the kind of things like there's dudes out there. There's people out there in general, because I'm not going to put anybody on blast, but I got sexually harassed in Austin, Texas, and it was crazy. Right. It's not the time. It's not nearly the same. But that lady who sexually harassed me did not get any of my body signals.
When? What was this?
We were at the bar, man. She was all up. Anyway, the point is there are people in the world who can't pick up signals.
Yeah.
They can't pick up these signals that you might be thinking you're giving out off explicitly.
Oh, shit. I forgot what you used to... Okay. Yeah, I forgot.
I mean, was I not?
I forgot. Yeah.
I mean, that was
I
crazy.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
If I did that, which I never would... If I did what she did to me, they would have put me under the jail.
This would have been... We wouldn't even been doing this.
Yeah, this whole thing would have been... They would have found my house, been protesting outside of my house with posters and stuff.
Yeah, I remember.
It would have been crazy.
I know you talk about now.
It was insane. Yeah. And I feel like I was very much like, okay, please... I don't want you to do that anymore, please.
Yeah.
So anyway, there are people in this world who can't pick them up or don't want to pick them up.
Yeah.
They feel like if they just keep pushing through and wear you down is like it's such a weird term.
This is not a movie.
No,
it's not a romantic movie.
It's not a romantic comedy. And they think like, well, she just like, I just need to be more aggressive and eventually she'll get tired of saying no. And then she'll say yes.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people's mentality.
Yeah.
Right. That's a whole separate conversation than you being a fucking person in the position of a hotel manager or custodial staff or anything like that, where you have keys and access to somebody's building and access to their contact information for emergency purposes. Like you have my number in case my apartment floods.
Yeah.
Why are you texting me WYD?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know what you even say. I feel so terrible. Like, I never thought about that before from the perspective of a woman, where you live in an apartment building and the maintenance person might make you feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But if you have a problem at your apartment building, that's who you have to call.
Yeah.
And they have to come and in your apartment and know where you, your work schedule and all this kind of stuff. And it's a very compromising position to be in. And this story of me and Marcano really opened my eyes to that. Cause again, every month, every week, every episode, we find out about some new angle that we hadn't thought about before because we're men in society. And this was just a new one for me where I was like, wow. So she was being harassed by her maintenance man. Mm-hmm. And then that ended up being the person that killed her.
Yeah.
So I guess the PSA that, again, because I can't tell the fucking dirtbag Armando Caballeros to be like, hey, man, don't do that. That's really creepy. And I can say it, but I don't know who I'm talking to. So all I can say is to the women who are often the targets of these people. For one, let me just say this. I've never in my life given out somebody's phone number when somebody has asked for a person's phone number. I'll say, hey man, yeah, let me contact them and see if that's cool. Or I'll give them your number. Since you want to talk to them, I'll give them your number. I've never given somebody's phone number to somebody, because here's a scenario. Like here's the thing that's happened to me in my life. Like I might think a girl is cute, mm-hmm. and I know their friend. So I go, hey man, such and such, like, you know, did they ever bring me up? Yeah, she actually gave me, she actually told me if you ever asked to give you her number.
Yeah.
That's way different than like, hey man, your friend such and such, do you think she would like me? I have no idea. She's literally never brought you up at any point in our life. I've ever never mentioned you, not one time. Right. Okay, cool. Well, can I have her number? The answer should be no.
Yeah.
Because there's been no implication that person has any interest in you at all.
Yep.
So if you're contacted by somebody who never had your number, and I'm sure this is a lot of women's scenario, I'm sure I'm not telling them something new.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to tell them how my brain has worked out this Mia Marcano story into something to say like, hey, just to remind people, if you're getting contacted by somebody who you know for sure you didn't give your number to them, if you're immediately uncomfortable, that's where you start the trail of like telling your friends, let people know, like, I don't know where this guy got my number from, but I'm just letting people know. So far, it's just like a how's your morning, good morning text or whatever. But I'm just letting people know I didn't give him my number. I don't know who gave it to him, but I'm just letting people know. The second it crosses over into discomfort and like, when can I take you out? You know, anything where you're like, I've already made it clear to you I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. That's when you start really making the real trail of telling people like, hey, screenshots, whatever. Because a few years back, remember the Good Morning Julia guy?
It was a guy,
he got this girl's number, allegedly. I don't really remember the full story, but the alleged story was he got her phone number off of some kind of sign-in sheet at a gym or something like that.
Ugh.
Crazy, right? And then he sent her a video message of himself on his phone being like, hey, Julia, good morning. My name's whatever. I saw you coming out of the gym the other day. I was like, she's beautiful. I would love to take you to dinner sometime. This is my house. He's taking the camera around his house, all the work you see in there, I did it myself, the ceiling fans, the crown molding, this is all me. That's the kind of guy you're getting. I would love to cook you some of my Nana sauce and, you know, just show you a good time, show you a good guy. You also, and then apparently she told him she wasn't interested because she said something about, yeah, I think I'm getting back together with my boyfriend.
Yeah.
So you're just listening to the things he's saying in the video. He's like, you're thinking about getting back together with your boyfriend. Don't do that. This is all the man you need right here. And it went viral because it was funny, right? But that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's not funny.
For a woman to get that message is fucking terrifying, especially if you didn't give them your phone number.
Yeah.
Right? So if you are in a position where you start receiving those kind of messages, you need to make it clear to as many people around you as possible, make a paper trail and possibly go to the police to make a record of like, hey, this person, if anything happens to me, suspect this person. Mm-hmm. Women a lot of times have a tendency to try to like laugh and polite their way through awkward situations.
Yeah.
Because it's scary. This dude could like snap and then it's a real problem, right? Yeah. But if the problem becomes a problem regardless of if you're nice or not, then what the fuck can you do?
Yeah.
If you try to polite and nice your way out of there and they go, see, wearing her down, and then you still end up in the same predicament where you could get hurt or worse, then what the fuck do you do? So you tell as many people around you, hey, this person got my number somehow, don't know how, or DMs.
Yeah.
People keep DMing you. I see screenshots of that all the time. I used to follow this account called like By Felipe,
yeah,
where it was like asshole dudes, and it would be like like over the course of 6 months. Hey, 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 good morning. Hey, hey. And then they never say anything. And then the last one's like, fuck you, you're an ugly bitch anyway, you stupid dumb bitch.
Yeah, I see that a lot. And I think a lot of men, I think that's like a hint that a lot of men should be able to detect.
You would think.
Because, I mean, there's been times where I was like,
you shoot your shot and you miss.
You do it like twice and you go, okay, I get it.
A logical person.
She's not interested. So you go, okay, whatever, you move on. But you don't go and insult them and disrespect them when they don't give you the response. Also, I'm sure you went through it too, where you have the girl give you her number, but you text her and the conversation is dry. That's when you go,
Maybe she realized she made a mistake here, or something like that.
That's when you go,
you got to be able to pick up these little small details, not like, oh, let me just keep on trying.
Yeah.
And then some dudes would be like, it's dick pic time.
Yeah.
Then it's like, this is crazy, man.
That's why.
I don't understand. I really, when I see people, like girls will put dudes on blast, presumably, and it could be some people automatically go to like, oh, this girl's a bitch. Like she tried to expose this dude. She might be trying to put it out there to go, hey, this guy's like harassing me. I want people to see evidence that it happened.
We've been around somebody that used to, they probably still do it, but did that. That go like, that try to talk to girls in public and then.
Oh man.
And they go.
I get well, away.
If you didn't call it B words, yeah. You're ugly. It's like, bro.
And then it's like, but you know something? And also, as men, we were supposed to say something.
Yeah.
But instead, what we did was we grew up and we just separated from people like that.
Oh, yeah.
And you look back and you wish you would have known, or you would have had the state of mind to do that back then, to go like, hey, like, why? Come on, man. Like, you're making all of us look like those guys. Yeah. Don't do that. You know, but instead you just go, oh, I don't like that person. Won't be hanging out with that person anymore. You get to a point where you grow up and you just are like, let me get away from people like that, right? But we need to learn as men to start checking those kinds of people, checking that kind of behavior, because there's nothing cool about that, man. Like, somebody's not wrong because they didn't give you what you wanted. That doesn't make them somebody that you should attack.
Yeah.
You know? And unfortunately, that happens a lot in society. It happens a lot to women. And it happened to me and Marcano, man. That's really unfortunate and really sad. And, you know, and you're a dad, man.
I see a lot of people in the comments on the story like this was just like, if you have sons, teach them how to take rejection.
Yes.
And I was like, that's super important. I have a son, and that's something you should be trying to teach them, like, you know, especially.
No means no.
No means no. And
learn
also.
Learn how to read if they're into you.
Yep. So that should be something you should be teaching your son. Also, with my son, I have a daughter also.
Yes.
And a mom in the house. So it's just like that environment.
Yeah.
He should be able to learn, like, man, look, if they're not interested in you, go, just don't be weird.
Don't
you
be
can
weird.
Be straight. You can be straight up with your son when you get older.
Don't be a weirdo.
Yeah. Don't be a weirdo.
I wish I had some other like clinical psychological word for it. But like, I feel like I would know when I was being a weirdo. It's not on women to be, I mean, they have to, unfortunately, but it shouldn't be on women to be on the lookout for creeps.
Yeah.
It should be the responsibility of parents like yourself or just a grown ass person to go, hey man, I'm going to not be a weirdo today.
Yeah.
As a man or a woman who's creepy and swipes your taint at a Texas bar and is like, hey, what's up? You know, any whatever. Well, just for example, to show both sides of the coin.
Yeah. Like, but that woman took a shot. And
it was a hell of a shot.
And she tried, and you know, blew it off, and it was just like, okay, well, she didn't attack. She didn't.
Yeah,
try
she
to
didn't like
come run
throw
for
a
you
drink on me.
Yeah, yeah, after we left the bar.
Yeah.
So I was like, but now that having this conversation, men are super creepy. Because what happens? Yeah. I tell Steph when she's out, especially when she's out with the kids, is like, be aware of your surroundings.
Yes.
If a dude is just like. In the aisle with just weird.
Not grabbing anything.
Call me. It's like, call me. And then like the other day she called me and was like, hey, I was in a parking lot and it was a shitload of spaces and the dude parked
right next to me.
And like when I looked out, he was looking right at me. And I was like, where are you at? And she was like, he left. But I was like, I was at work. I was ready to go. Cause like,
just don't do that.
Weird. Like, but why, like, again, why are you doing shit like that?
Again, how do you get that message to that guy? He's not listening to this, and he also thinks, like, I'm not doing anything wrong. Fuck you, man.
But you are, man.
But you are. But they, some of these people really don't know.
It's crazy, man.
And then let's just play devil's advocate for 1 second, and let's just say Armando Caballero shot his shot.
Yeah.
But his shot was, it was a crazy shot. He came and just came to her apartment and opened the door. And in his mind,
yeah.
Well, she says good morning to me and stuff, so this will be like a flattering move.
Yeah.
And then his cognitive dissonance when she goes, "What the fuck are you doing in my apartment? Can you?" He's like, he can't even process the idea of her not being madly in love with him
yeah.
and finding this creepy gesture flattering. Mm-hmm. And then he attacks her. He could also have just been a psychopath who went right in for an attack.
Yeah.
But he could have, in his mind, been doing something that he thought was going to be flattering to her.
Yeah.
And it was, in fact, terrifying because he doesn't have the ability to process the difference.
Yeah. Also, your first impression is the most important one. And she probably, just saying, she probably thought.
She wrote this dude off long ago.
But I'm saying, like, maybe he did something from the jump
yeah.
that was super weird. And it was like, oh, this.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
I'm ending this immediately because
yes.
whatever you just did was super weird. I'm not into
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So you won't even get like a good morning from right. me anymore.
Yeah.
He probably was at that point.
Yes.
And he thought like, oh, I need to show her like a really desperate, real gesture.
No.
You know,
and you could be good looking, but once you do something weird, it's like,
yeah,
that goes for anybody. Women, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
You do something, it's like, oh no, I'm yeah. not. No.
Right. Wrote writ off. Is writ a word? Written off. It's written off.
Yeah,
I'm sure writ is a word, but it doesn't mean what I'm trying yeah. to say. Written off. You can get written off. It's a lot of like the world has convinced everybody that they're special and important, and people grow up and really think that.
Yeah,
people grow up and really think the world is mine. I should get what I want because my mom and my dad gave me everything I wanted. So
yeah.
If I like this girl, she should like me. One of the most like interesting, and we'll go to the shout outs after this. One of the most interesting like litmus tests for how a person thinks is this movie called 500 Days of Summer. Mm. If you watch this movie, depending on who you are like on the side of, will really tell you a lot about a person. I feel like most people would at the end of the movie go, man, that guy's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
But there might be some people that go, she let him on. Like she started dating him a little bit and then didn't date him. It's like, It's a real interesting litmus test, that movie. So I recommend people who have seen the movie, I'd love to hear people's thoughts on that movie. It's really interesting how the male and female brains work, like, or just people in general about somebody meeting your expectations and how it's not their responsibility to meet your expectations. Mm-hmm. It's not on them to be what you've painted in your brain. That's not anybody's responsibility. That's your fault.
Yeah.
For putting all these eggs in this basket and being like, well, when I finally date this person, I'll get a promotion and my life will be better and the roses will smell so much sweeter. And then when that person goes, I don't like you at all.
Yeah.
It just breaks the last decade of your, like you planned out so much shit and it shatters everything. And people can't handle that. Some people can't handle that. Yeah. And they snap. And it's fucking weird and crazy. So just don't be a fucking weirdo is the kind of to put a bow on it. Don't be a fucking weirdo, man.
Oh, I do have a random question for you.
Oh, yeah, friend. Okay, let's do it.
So I saw a post. I was on Instagram last night, saw a post. Now, we talked about our trip in 5 years to Japan.
Japan, yes.
And I'm super excited about
yes.
it. So I looked up some stuff and I saw an article where it was like, what are things that is normal to us?
Sure.
That is unusual to us, but normal to
Japan.
To people in Japan.
Okay. I'm very intrigued by this.
Yeah, so there was a list of maybe like, I think it was like 20, but I'm going to just read a couple.
Read the juicy ones or the craziest ones that we would think are crazy.
Well, this might seem crazy. It's crazy to me.
Okay.
But one of the things was that the streets are clean.
That's sad. Oh, we got to move.
Streets are clean.
We got to move from Baltimore.
Yes.
That's sad that you think. That's, yeah.
Yes, and they hardly have any trash, public, like, trash cans.
Okay.
That is so, the streets so clean. And the gutters are.
That breaks my heart.
Yes, the gutters are so clean that they have, like, the water streams that's in them, they have koi fish in them because they're so clean.
Are you sure this isn't propaganda?
No,
that sounds
man.
That you had me with the clean streets because I've been places where the streets are clean, of course. Not Baltimore is not one of them.
Yeah,
but it's fish swimming around in the angelically in the rainwater in the sewers.
Yes.
I don't know. Okay.
You don't know about that?
They don't know about that. That might be them trying to, you know, they embellish it a little bit. The streets might be clean, but you can fish. You can just grab. Oh man, I dropped my phone.
So clean.
I dropped my phone in the sewer. Shit, let me grab it. Oh, so a fish.
Yeah.
You accidentally
a beautiful koi fish.
A koi fish, bro. People get those tattooed on their body, and you can accidentally just pull one out when you try to pick up your AirPod that you dropped.
Hey man, they sold me.
All right, okay. All right, hey, I'm into it. Hey man, Japan.
Another one was, in Japan, tipping is rude. It's considered rude.
That's a lot of places. In Ireland, it's the same way.
Is it?
Because people pay a living wage everywhere else. Hmm. Tipping is, you understand, tipping is disgusting, right? Like, we live by that culture that tipping is cool or whatever, but those people make like $1.26 an hour. So they have to get tips. Everywhere else is just like, no, we get paid a nice amount of money, and so we don't have to, you don't have to tip. If you like me, cool, but you don't have to tip.
But I mean, it's considered rude, though. Like, just don't do it at all. Don't do it at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't we have a listener that's in Japan or no?
Korea,
okay.
We might have a listener in Japan, but I know for sure Korea.
Yeah. So another one was slurping noodles is polite.
Well, can I guess? Is it because like, ooh, it's good? Is that why, like, is that like a sign of like, I love these?
It means you are enjoying it.
Okay, yeah. No, yeah. That is weird, because that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being on a date and somebody just go...
Yeah,
the sauce, and then the last noodle flicks up and it gets on your face because like it's like backsplash. Nah, and
you would say that's gross.
Yeah,
like, clean your mouth or whatever.
But in Japan, it means you love the meal.
Yes, another one was you can rent a boyfriend in Japan.
Ooh, okay, interesting. That's a good hustle because people are lonely, man.
Yeah,
or you like a wedding. I could see the events where somebody could need to rent a girlfriend or a boyfriend. It's like, you don't want to go to something alone.
Yeah.
You're not going to advertise that I rented them. You could just go, oh, we met and I decided to invite them to this wedding. But you rented a boyfriend, a good looking person that you can talk to people and have a good time and people compliment you. Because if you bring a person who is a hit mm-hmm. to an event, it's a compliment to you. Like, they'll be like, man, that person you brought, man, good, nice.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, thank you.
Cool.
So I could see how that could be a nice little... investment.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
No, but it is weird. No, it's weird.
It's weird.
But I get it. Yeah. I get the business model.
It's weird, but I mean, like, but it's a.
Do they fuck?
I think it's. I don't think so.
Okay, because like it doesn't get that's that an escort. We have escorts here.
Yeah, I know that.
You get like a high profile escort, but rent a boyfriend sounds a lot more cute. You know.
I think that sounds way better than renting a woman.
Doing what?
Maybe that's just opposite. The opposite.
Oh, rent. Yeah. Well, yeah.
I think that's.
Yeah. Well, because the kind of guy that would rent, quote unquote, a woman, in your mind, yeah. In my mind, you think of like a shy girl that like, oh, I just, you know, would love a guy to take me on a picnic. But a guy that like wants to rent a girl is like, hey, Toots, I want to take you out to dinner tonight. I want you to wear something skimpy. And then
this person Italian,
I want you to only touch the balls. And you're like,
are
what?
Italian?
Yeah.
Bronx is in Brooklyn somewhere.
Yeah, it's Tony Soprano. It's less cute. It's less cute for sure. The idea. Rent a boyfriend is like, oh, cute. She just wants somebody to hold her hand for the day. And the other one is like, oh, that's insidious.
Yeah. Another one was they have vending machines everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, interesting things in them.
Yeah. Yeah. They have like a bug vending machine, but that's not even one I was going to bring up.
A bug vending machine?
Yeah. I didn't look into it. Just I saw it and I was like, that seems kind of weird. I don't
like
know
you could
if
you get
can,
a bug out?
I don't know. I didn't look into it. I just saw it and I was like,
man, I would
on.
Love a beetle right now.
Yeah. But another one was that vending machines sell alcohol in them.
Fun.
Yeah.
I'm into that. I would love that.
Yeah.
That,
and, that's and not, drinking in public is also
cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's dope. It's like New Orleans.
Yeah.
You just walk around New Orleans, one of those big cups. We're going to get some of those in Vegas, by the way. The big long cups with the straw.
Yeah.
You just walk around the streets getting fucked up. I can't wait, man.
Yeah. Another one was that was super important was that I liked was theft is non-existent.
Come on. See, go grab your belt. Go back into propaganda again,
man.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Nobody steals.
I don't think
nobody.
Don't they chop your hands off or something there?
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't,
probably.
I feel like I've heard that in Taiwan and other Thailand, maybe. But I don't know. It's non-existent. Somebody steals. Leave some money on the table. Somebody steals.
I don't know, man.
I mean, listen.
I'm excited to go.
Listen. Your list you just read? I already have been dying to go to Japan.
Yeah.
If you can just grab koi fish out of the sewers and
sold,
nobody
man.
Steals,
yeah.
I'm in even more than I was. I didn't think it was possible to be any more in.
They are super futuristic. And they have like a rotating car garage. I want to see that.
I do want to. I saw that in Tokyo Drift. They've had that for decades.
Yeah.
That's been out since 2003.
Insane. That's insane. But
which car do I want? So it's like, what car? Where's my car?
Swims, yeah, go around.
Yeah, spins around.
They just so more. It's just they seem like they're so far advanced.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to go. It's probably like New York City. And is it like...
It's like New York City. Well, Tokyo is.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, it's Tokyo.
But there's
okay.
Japan. There's like rural parts of Japan that are like humble and stuff. But like big city Japan, Tokyo is... Yeah. It seems... We don't live there.
Yeah.
So we don't want to make presumptions. But it seems like they're very ahead. And
a rotating car garage?
And futuristic.
Wow.
And very like... there's no inhibitions and taboos. Like, if you want to wear a costume today, you can just do that. Yeah. Like, I dress like a cartoon character every day, and nobody bats an eye, and that seems super cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, Tokyo.
I can't wait, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, but first is Vegas. So
Vegas, one step at a time. Yeah, one step at a time. We're gonna go to Vegas. We're gonna conquer Vegas.
Yeah,
and then we're gonna jump over to. We're gonna jump across the pond. It's gonna be step. We're gonna jump across the pond. Not Tokyo. Not Japan. Somewhere in.
I gotta build up to that. Cause that's a hell of a flight.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll do we'll go to London or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go to CrimeCon UK.
Mm.
Never know.
Yeah.
Just put it out there. Manifestation. Put it out there. Maybe we go. That'll be us taking a step to putting our toe in the pond, as they say. That's what they say over there. Till you put your foot in the pond. So maybe we put a foot in the pond over there, over across water, and that'll be a little test. And then when we come back, then in 5 years we go here from boom here, Japan.
Yeah.
That's gonna be dope.
Yeah.
So super fun, man. But let's go ahead and get into these shout outs. That's right, folks. It's time for some Patreon shout outs. Once again, Cult-tober continues. Episode 2 is out now. I covered a really interesting cult from Uganda. I thought the episode went really well. I'm really having a good time editing and putting together the score and everything that is involved in that. And I can't wait to put out another Cult-tober every Friday. Join the Patreon at the serial killer level, and you can enjoy some of that content. Up first, our first shout out goes to Alana W. Alana W, shout out to you. Thank you very much for joining the Patreon. I hope you're enjoying the content over there. Much appreciated. Up next, we got Cassie.
It's me and you now. But I'm hating.
Fran used to be in love with her, right?
Oh,
yeah, what? Yeah, big time. But not this Cassie, but I'm sure she's awesome as well. I'm sure somebody loves her. So shout out to Cassie E. Much appreciated. Up next, we got Izzy Marsh. I mean, Izzy M. Izzy or Izzy-ny? I don't know. It's confusing. No, smokescreen. Don't say anything.
You know,
Izzy or Izzy-ny? I don't know. Izzy? Izzy is not.
The crazy
Izzy
part
not.
Is, every week I wait till you do that.
I was trying to move past it. That's fine. I was trying to throw a smokescreen, man. You ruined it. Izzy, shout out to Izzy M. Much appreciated for the support. We thank you. Up next, we got Anna L. Shout out to you, Anna. Thank you very much. That is a great picture. See, that's a person who's made the most of the space that they're provided for the Patreon little profile photo. I can tell that that's a person, a great smile, seems like a nice person. Thank you, Anna. Shout out to you. Up next, we got Bianca S. Shout out to Bianca S. Much love. Thank you for the support. We appreciate you. Up next, we got Whitney with the Y is capital at the end. I don't know why the Y is capitalized at the end. I'm not really understanding the vision in that. But we appreciate you nonetheless, okay? So shout out to Whitney. Thank you. Much love and appreciation to you. Up next, we got Uma. I don't have to say it. Uma D. Oh, we're going to go ahead. There's a lot going on there. So you know who you are already. I'm saying there's a lot there. But Uma, like Uma Thurman. So shout out to Uma. I'm assuming it's like Uma Thurman anyway. Uma, shout out to you. Hope you're enjoying that content over there. Much love. Thank you. You are a true serial killer. We appreciate everybody that we just named. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into this fucked up shit. So stick around.
Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom. Well, let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of MyLifeInABook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out MyLifeInABook.com. That's MyLifeInABook.com. And use code AMP. That's A, M as in Mother's Day, P at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day. One more time, that's mylifeinabook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today.
Fran, before you jump into your story, I just wanted to touch on a story that we covered that's actually starting to get attention right now because Khalil Wheeler Weaver, he was known as like the Tinder killer. He was a social. He was using social dating apps to lure women in and kill them.
Yeah.
And parks in New Jersey. He was sentenced to like 160 years this past week.
Good.
So good riddance to him. Rotten hell. And that episode that we covered that story on was actually episode 157.
Mm-hmm.
It's titled "What's Up, Dog." I actually prank called my mom before we got into the story. That was funny.
But that was a year ago, right?
Yeah, it was some time ago. So that's aside from obviously the seriousness of the story. Yeah, yeah. But that story is cut. We cover that story in that episode 157. What's up, dog? So if people want to check that out to find out if you aren't familiar with Khalil Wheeler Weaver, you can get the details or some of the details. Again, we're not fucking. I didn't fucking catch him. I don't know all the details, yeah. But I covered the details that I could find in the story that I did on episode 157. Yeah. Anyway, Fran, back to you.
Yeah. So my affirmative murder this week is about the story of Ella Mae Wiggins.
Ella Mae Wiggins.
Ella Mae Wiggins. Yeah.
Ella Mae is great. Just the singer.
Yes. She's great. Yes. But this is not.
That's not her. No relation.
This is in 19. This is like 1900.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's probably no relation.
Absolutely not. Okay. So Ella Mae Wiggins was born in 1900 near Sevierville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
She was second of her parents' 12 children.
Oh.
I feel like that time they was just like busting them out, man.
Yeah, it was no contraception, man. They might have had like sheepskin condoms maybe, but there was no real birth control
just
like that today.
Just letting them out.
And people were Catholic. So even if there was birth control, Catholic people don't believe in it.
Mm.
That's why people today,
yeah.
A lot of Catholics have like, Philip Rivers is like a Catholic guy or Christian guy. He has like 11 children.
Yeah.
He's got the bread for it, but some people don't have the bread for it and still have like 12 children.
That's crazy. So yes, yeah, so
can you even love 12 kids? I mean, listen.
I don't know, man. That's a lot.
Listen,
you obviously have a favorite.
You got your favorites.
Yes,
you got your favorites.
That many? Yes.
Come on, man. I don't know if there's that. You know, people. I got a big heart, man. I don't know if I got that much love to go around. I don't love 12 friends.
12
love?
Kids.
Love's a big word.
12 kids, man.
You would die for all 12 of your kids. Come on, man. Somebody would hesitate on that one. The last one? One of the last two ones.
The last,
this
like,
one that's
you
six.
Got 12. The last, like, three is like, that was a mistake. I feel like. It may be fucked up to say, but I mean, like, the last three, you didn't want.
They
you
walked really, out. You didn't yeah, even you know didn't, you were pregnant. Oh, no. The last 10, 11, and 12?
That's a lot of kids, man.
10, 11, and 12. You would do anything for 10, 11, and 12. I know one, no question.
Oh, yeah.
Three? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
11?
After that.
11, you would do anything for. The same passion as the first three. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a parent.
Yeah.
So, obviously, what I'm saying probably sounds stupid. People out there, I'm sure we have a listener that has high-volume kids.
Yeah.
Maybe not 12, but maybe 6. I don't know. Even that sounds like
that
a lot.
That sounds a lot, man. I have 2, man, and they drive me crazy. I mean, when they're up and active, it's like...
It's a problem.
It's... They're
you
all
ever seen that movie Cheaper by the Dozen?
No.
Oh, man, it's crazy. It's fucking Steve Martin and can't remember the other lady's name. I think she's a lady from Jumanji. And they have 12 kids from aging from like 18 to 7. And the house is crazy. The kids are swinging from the chandelier.
Yeah.
Two of the kids are twins. It's like, man, this is nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's crazy. It's wild, man. 12, I have, like I said.
And that's you. You just did that pause and that head shake with 2 kids.
I have 2. You have 12. 4 of them is in the same age within like 5 years.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
At least.
They might all be.
That is wild. I get nightmares when I see people have twins. And I go,
oh, man.
Whoa.
It's a blessing. Listen.
It is a blessing.
It's a blessing. But like,
it's
when somebody comes, when your partner comes and says, I'm pregnant, most people aren't thinking like, I hope it's twins. So when you find out, it's like, damn, okay, well, I got to do everything I had planned on doing. I got to do double of that.
It's a blessing, yes. It's cute when they're babies. But the good thing is of it, when they hit, they're going to hit the same age at the same time.
Yeah.
So then you'll be done.
The other one, like, can look out for the other one.
You can go.
And we got 2 kids.
When
18
is like,
done.
Oh, both of y'all can be go. Y'all can just go and I don't have to.
I feel like golden scenario is probably fraternal twins, boy, girl.
Okay.
That's probably you want, if you want one of each.
Yeah.
Golden scenario, which is the odds of this. I don't even know the Las Vegas odds on fraternal boy girl twins.
Yeah.
But that's probably like, oh, we're done. I'm getting a vasectomy this weekend.
Yeah.
Like, we did it. Congratulations.
At the same time?
Same time, same age. The other one can look out for the other one. Boom. It's a wrap.
Yeah. 12 is, again.
Oh, 12 is nuts.
That's a lot of kids. So Ella Mae's family moved often because her father worked in logging camps. Ella Mae and her mother contributed to the family income doing laundry for workers. At the age of 14, Ella Mae married 23-year-old. Well, okay.
That was acceptable back then.
Yeah. Oh, it was?
Yeah, you want a young girl with a lot of childbearing years. So I married a 14-year-old girl. That's crazy. Fucking crazy. To even say it, that sounds insane. Right.
That sounds gross to be like, yeah, everybody was doing it. Like,
yeah.
What? At age 14, Ella Mae married 23-year-old logger John Wiggins. The newlyweds lived near Ella Mae's family, but not for long. Ella Mae's father and mother and four of her siblings died of accidents or illnesses within 6 years.
Damn.
So by 1920, Ella Mae had very little family left. The logging industry was in decline, and she and John had a growing family of their own. Ella Mae, John, and their children moved from town to town looking for work before settling in Gaston County, the textile mill capital of the world. The pay at the mills was terrible, but Ella Mae needed money. She changed jobs often and hoped that the next place would be better. But most mills were the same. Long hours, high productivity demands, and low wages.
Mm.
So Ella Mae gave birth to 9 children.
Damn.
But only 5 survived infancy.
Maybe they were having, maybe that it was like a failsafe.
What?
Like you have more kids because you just expect some of them might die.
I ain't thinking about that.
For the times. If you're having 12 kids now, it's the same. Unless you live on a farm or something, you still live that type of, the people that have beards. They have horses. They don't do technology. Goddamn. Rumspringer. Rumspringer. Goddammit. Oh, okay. We got this, friend. No, fuck that. Okay. It's not Mormon, but it's something with an M, right?
They breed dogs.
Is that a fact? I didn't know that one.
That's where I got my dog from.
Got him from one of these people? Yeah. Amish! It's an Amish person!
There you go.
I don't know why the dog thing helped me. Okay, so maybe like people today that are Amish or work on farms still have 12 kids for the help. But back then, probably you expect a few to die, possibly. And you need help. Yeah, you just need like, I need help around the farm. And also some of them might die from consumption. So let's just have a litter and see who... survival of the fittest.
Oh, see, look, if we do.
It's like we want six.
If we had 12.
Yeah, we want. We want six.
We make it 4.
There you go.
We want 4, but we gotta have 12.
Yeah, that's
to get the 4.
Yeah.
That's
my logic.
That is
on it.
Wild.
That's crazy.
That's wild. That is one hell of a way to plan a family out. So it was like the last. That's fucked up.
Right. That's dark. Right.
Like, hey, these three might not be here.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I don't.
I call him boy. I don't even commit his name to memory. He looks weak.
If he makes it past 7,
yeah, then we can start saying his name. Yeah,
that's fucked up, man. Jesus. So Ella Mae gave birth to 9 children, but only 5 survived infancy. John was an alcoholic who left for days and weeks at a time, often taking Ella Mae's hard-earned money with him. In 1926, he left and did not return.
Damn,
so he's a dirtbag.
Pack cigarettes. He did your pack cigarettes trick, huh?
Oh, I'm gonna go to the store.
Yeah, go to the store real quick.
He probably didn't do that.
Just left. Not even that much respect.
No. Yeah, so at the age of 26, Ella Mae was the single working mother of 5 children. Shout out to all the single heartbreaking mothers out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Ella Mae was single working mother of 5 children under the age of 8. So she had 5 children, and they all was, that's a rough window.
What's that called? Toddlers? That's older than toddlers, right?
8? If they're under the 8, they like 3 or 4?
Yeah, that's a toddler. But what's 8? That's like just a kid.
Kid, I guess.
She had 5 kids.
They're 8. They're adults now.
Yeah. So y'all need to get a job. Y'all got to
start working. Yeah. So by 1929, she earned $9 per week.
That sounds like a lot, right? That sounds like a lot for back then. No?
I'm talking about compared to now. That is crazy. $9 a week?
Oh, a week? Oh, I thought you said an hour.
No.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
She's rich.
And she's working like a lot, right? What is that? She's making like 10 cents an hour?
I don't know.
Oh, $9 a week.
A week. And you have six mouths to feed? $9 a week.
I thought you said an hour. No. I was like, like a million? That's like great.
She was good.
Oh, that's how much a president
her husband
made
would still
then.
Be around.
Oh,
she's
yeah,
making
hell yeah. That's Oprah. She's making Oprah money.
If she's making that, she might be something related to Ella Mae.
Yeah.
Because that's crazy. Now that I was, you said that, I was like, what?
Yeah, I was like, I thought, yeah, I heard an hour. So, yeah, I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so she earned $9 a week working the graveyard shift for 60 hours a week.
Oh, hold on. Yeah. No, we got to do math on that one.
Yeah.
No. Oh, my God.
You got to do it the other way.
Is it?
I think so.
Okay, no, because you can't divide the smaller number by the big number.
Oh, hell no.
Sad, man. We're done. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and say what I'm thinking it is, and then whatever the number. Okay so I'm gonna do 60 hours. Divided by
six. I mean nine. What?
No, man. I got this, bro. So we're gonna do.
What are we doing?
I'm trying to figure out how much she makes an hour.
Oh, okay.
So we're gonna do 60 hours divided by sir.
What?
Nine. No, what was it? $9?
$9 a week.
Divided by nine. $60 an hour. Oh, wait. I think it's 6.66 cents an hour.
No, that's not right. $6 an hour.
Man, we should have stayed in school, man. This is sad. Oh, wow. I don't know what the proper fraction is. I don't know what we're supposed to be trying to do.
Look, I got
what's
you.
The formula?
So she made $9 a week.
Okay.
So she worked 60 hours.
She made 60 hours. She made $9 a week for 60 hours a week of work.
15 cents.
Boom. Okay. Wow. Okay. What'd you do?
I did. Nine divided by 60.
Nine, because that's how much you made.
Yes.
Then you divide that because that's a total.
Yes.
Then you divide that by 60. The number of hours.
Yes. 15
got
cents.
Got it. Okay. I didn't know the proper formula we were.
Yeah, man. You tried to shut me down. I've been working. I worked the numbers. What I do, man. You can't be like, hey, you can't divide the smaller number. Yeah, you can.
That's fair.
Nah, I was like $6 an hour. We just had the conversation. She'd have been making bread.
Yeah, yeah, that's my fault. So 15 cents an hour?
15 cents an hour.
Okay, Fran. Yeah, well, good job, Fran. Way to come in clutch on that. Man, so I'm done.
But we still took a while. It took way too long.
Yeah. It's really mixed. It's overall, the message is that's really sad and we should have stayed in school.
Yeah, well.
Oh, well. I don't regret it at all. I'm doing pretty great in life. So. Actually, you know what? I take that back, man. Life's going all right.
So, I disagree with that. I don't know about that one. Yeah, so.
15 cents an hour.
She worked the graveyard shift, so. The worst shift you can. Yeah. So
what's graveyard like? Midnight to six or something.
Something like
somewhere
that.
Those hours though.
Yeah. So six nights a week she put her children to bed and went to work. Hearing that, I go, that is crazy because my kids can't
sleep.
Max barely sleeps through the night. So you
and there's nobody else there.
Nobody else there.
Mm, yeah.
So that's.
Well, it's other kids.
I guess
they all like the same age, so it's not like.
I guess that helps. That helps.
Yeah.
You get the oldest one to be like, you know, if I'm going to work.
Hold it down.
Watch. Yeah. So I understand that. She had to do what she had to do.
Yeah.
So she put her children to bed and went to work. In the mornings, she returned home, made breakfast, and took care of the family while trying to rest.
Mm.
Hard-working mom.
Yeah, man.
So Ella Mae tried to maintain some control of her life. She refused to live in one of the mill-owned shanties. Instead, she lived in an African-American neighborhood outside of town, where she briefly worked in one of the town's only integrated mills.
Oh, wow.
On April 1st, 1929, nearly 2,000 workers at the Luray Mill in Gastonia, North Carolina, went on strike.
I like it. Let's do it. Unionize.
Yep. Luray Mill was one of the largest textile mills in the world. The strikers demanded a living wage and better working conditions. They were led by a communist organization, the National Textile Workers Union. When the union invited Ella Mae's mill to join the strike, she was one of the first to walk off the job.
Mm.
So she has a family to feed.
But she knows that we go through this hard time right now and it'll end up a better situation for everybody.
But
if you stick, if you stick to it.
Right. But that's what I mean, though.
Yeah.
She's like, I have a family, we need to make more money. And these work conditions are terrible.
Yes.
And she was like, and she doesn't live on the shitty shanties that the textile offer to live in. I guess they maybe do it for free.
Yeah.
But she was like, I have five kids. This is probably not enough space.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Terrible living conditions. And all kinds
living
of
in this fucking shack.
Right. So Ella Mae was convinced the union was the only way to give her children a better life.
Mm-hmm.
She spoke at rallies. I mean, she was
like a prominent figure line. In the union.
She was front line doing. She was out there marching and fucking preaching all kinds of shit. So she spoke at rallies, joined the picket lines, and attended meetings. Again, she have kids. She has to feed, and she's not. They're not working.
Right and now. She's a woman.
Yep.
At this time.
Yep. Yep.
So that's a big deal.
Yeah. So she traveled with a small delegation to Washington D.C. to testify before the Senate. The Senate adjourned before the strikers could argue their case, but Ella Mae did not stop there. The mill owners fought back hard. They kicked tenants out of the mill-owned houses and hired mill thugs to harass strikers.
Mm.
By late spring, many people returned to work. They was just like,
Fuck tired this. Of this. I'm homeless now because they took the housing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's resilience. That's what I was talking about. Yeah, people like, I can't. I get it, but yeah. I need to get paid.
Yeah. But that's when sometimes you got to fucking go and fucking bash some nerd skulls.
Yeah.
And go, you're not crossing this fucking picket line, because some of those people some of those scabs might be people who were just picketing with you a month ago. I'm gonna go back to work now. I need to work.
But the owners ago, they hired.
So
by late spring, many people returned to work, but a dedicated group of 300 strikers, including LMA, refused to back down. The remaining strikers set up a camp on the outskirts of town and continued to picket and host rallies. Mm. Altercations with the mill sympathizers and local police were often violent. In June, police officers raided the strikers' camp. The raid turned violent and the chief of police was killed.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're like a terrorist group. Yeah. Now it's gone to somewhere else.
Yeah. So most of the town's elite sided with the mill owners, especially after the police officer died.
Mm-hmm.
Local newspapers wrote that the strikers were an un-American, communist, un-Christian, and immoral.
Mm.
I'm sorry, they took particular issues with the women strikers. You know, they're like, oh, women? Y'all want to?
Yeah.
Oh, we about to shut all this down. They claimed that female strikers were too independent and outspoken.
Yep.
They dressed like flappers with bobbed hair, short skirts, and men's hats because they weren't working. They walked around the town during the day, contributing nothing to society. Worst of all, female strikers were active in picket lines and did not shy away from clashes with the mill thugs. The local press argued these women were destroying the values of the old South.
Mm-mm-mm.
So these women were like,
I would love for somebody to like write down what the values of the old, because you hear that a lot, like, oh, we're just traditional Southern. It's like, it feels like it's like mostly racism and sexism.
I don't
like,
want to. I don't want to hear.
Like, what are you? So what are you saying? I just wish it was. You know, let's go back to how it was. Like, what do you mean by that?
Alabama just.
I mean, that's all you got to say. Alabama just everything. Everything. They just did it yesterday. They just did it 10 minutes ago.
They just took out of what is it called? Their
Alabama Constitution or whatever.
That, like, they could just send
segregation. Like, yeah,
to just different get schools.
The old Southern ways, man.
That is so wild, man.
The old Southern right. ways.
So the strikers were even more unpopular when they began to consider racial integration. LMA was at the forefront of this effort. That's kind of my reason why I'm doing this story.
Mm-hmm.
She worked with black labor leaders and encouraged them to join the strike. Black laborers were invited to one union meeting, but were asked to sit in the segregated section. LMA crossed the line and sat with the black workers in a show of solidarity.
Oh, it was so, you know, they tore her apart in the media.
Oh, yeah, she's a
Negro loving.
Yeah. So I think this was a quote from her. We're going to have a union all over the South where we can wear good clothing and live in a better house. Now we must stand together. And to the boss's reply, we'll never let our union die.
Yeah.
LMA had an unusual talent for music. She wrote over 20 original protest songs. The songs used traditional melodies and included simple and repetitive lyrics. Her most popular song was The Mill Mother's Lament, which described what it was like to leave her children behind every day and why the union was her only source of hope. So I'm going to play that song. Just give you a little hint of that song.
Sounds powerful.
This is Pete Seeger kind of just remade the song.
Right. Turn it up. New LMA.
We leave our homes in the morning. We kiss our children goodbye.
Oh, wow.
While we slave for the bosses, our children scream and cry. And when we draw our money, our grocery bills to pay, not a cent to spend for clothing, not a cent to lay away. And on that very evening, our little son will say, I need some shoes, mother, and so does Sister May.
So that was written by
Jesus Christ.
LMA. Hey, man.
That was such a bummer.
They need food, man. They don't have extra cents to just be laying around, man.
Made me sad.
The little boy needs shoes, man. This is she written this from the heart. This is what she was living. All you know, them rappers out there rapping all that bullshit.
Yeah.
This was
talk written. To him, friend.
So that was written by, yeah, that was one of her original songs.
Remember when you asked me a couple weeks ago when you were like, what is Phoebe Bridges? Like, what does that mean?
That's what she make?
A little bit. I was in a crowd of like 4,000 people listening.
Were you the only black person there?
It was some, we were there. No, it was some of us there. I counted like 12. One of them was on the stage, but he counted still.
Speaking of that, I went to a farm the other day.
Talk to me about it.
And we went, I was like, man, it is hella white people here.
Yeah, white people love farms.
That makes me uncomfortable.
Okay, you're the only black person there.
Yeah.
Why are you uncomfortable? What is it? Because I, what?
Because I, I don't know. It just, I feel like there's just no type of connection with a whole bunch of white people and just like one black person. I just don't see.
Okay.
There's nothing there for them. I don't know. I just.
And you feel like an odd man out.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's just like we go and it's just like some of them, they speak.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to say it like that, but some of them, they speak and they say hi, whatever, have conversations. Your kids are beautiful. I hate it all the time, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I do have beautiful kids.
All right, man. You're bragging, though.
And we hear that. And
they
just,
are.
And then, whatever. And then some of them, they just don't speak. I don't know. I just feel like when you go out and you just come across somebody and they look at you, they just. There should be some type of speak. I don't
interaction
know.
Or interactions. Something.
Head nod. I just think it's weird when people just walk past each other and they look at each other and it's just like, nothing. There's nothing. I don't like talking to people, but still, I just
and
think.
You feel like
people,
that's more common when you're the only black person in the scenario?
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
I get that.
But I mean, I had a good time.
Yeah.
People were nice, but it's just weird.
Enough of the people were nice.
Yeah. A lot of places I go, please let me see a black person. This is how we are. Sorry. Yeah, moving on. So that was the song Ella May that she wrote. So on the afternoon of September 14th, Ella May and other strikers rode in a truck to attend a rally. A group of men associated with the mill armed with guns ambushed them on the side of the road. Ella May, who was pregnant at the time, was shot in the chest and died. No one else was killed, leaving many to conclude Ella May was assassinated.
Wow.
Her independence, talent, and belief in racial and economic equality were threats to the mills.
Mm-hmm.
The strike dissolved within weeks. So she was the heartbeat of this whole thing. She was the leader. She was pushing this thing. I think if she was alive, she could have did some damage.
Yeah.
Because she had the people behind her. She could have
built a strong union.
Yep, she had the African-American people coming in like, we believe in what she's trying to fight for.
Yeah.
And they saw the momentum that she was getting, I assume, and was like, we gotta do something about this.
That's what happened to Jimmy Hoffa, man.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hoffa was a union leader, and he got a little too, started turning down the mob when they would ask him to do shit. Mm-hmm. And all he had a lot of power, though. All the union people believed in him.
Yeah.
But a union worker, even with the numbers, it's just like a working person. Like,
yep.
Will any of them shoot somebody?
Right.
Because my guy will.
Yeah,
man. It's dangerous work, man.
Yeah, so the strike dissolved within weeks, so people was just like,
yeah. They killed the focal point. They killed the leader.
The leader was like, we got to go back to work, and this shit just. So although mill workers saw her as important to this whole thing, to this whole cause, they were also terrified by the violence of her death. So they saw what happened to her, and it was like,
I don't want that to happen
to me. I don't want that to happen to me.
Yeah.
So five men were charged with Ella May's murder. Over 50 eyewitnesses testified against them, but the jury returned a not guilty verdict in under 30 minutes.
Wow.
50 witnesses.
But do you know why, though?
Why, because of money?
No. Oh. One, she was messing with black people.
Oh, yeah.
Two, the media definitely painted them out to be like communists. From all the same shit you see from see today. Communism, trying to take over the country, destroy the country. They're terrorists. They killed the sheriff. So it doesn't matter what happened to her. Fuck her.
Yep.
That's what the jury felt when they walked into that room. Yep. This communist, Negro loving terrorist, not guilty. Those people are heroes.
Oh yeah. So again, they guilty verdict, another 30 minutes. Labor activists were devastated. One union leader wrote an article that argued that the decision proved that life of a mill worker was considered worthless. Ella May songs became her legacy. Historians recorded her work as examples of folk protest songs and famous folk singers like Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie. What is that?
Country singer.
It's a country singer. Oh, I've never heard him before. Publicly performed and praised her work. So Her legacy is still living on. People are
booed up
her songs.
Booed up, it's a great song.
Come on, man. No, that's not that's not the song she put out there, man.
No disrespect.
So the fight for workers' rights continued across the country for decades, and LMA's words were there to provide and instill solidarity.
Yeah.
So shout out to LMA. I read that story and I was like, I think I kind of did a story like this a while ago. That was another female worker that was helping out. I think she worked for the NAACP. I think.
Yeah, when she was on the doing the She was doing like the civil rights marches and
stuff. Yeah. So she was going to Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
fighting and marching with these people and letting her word speak for what she's fighting for. And then
she got killed in the car with them.
Yeah, she got killed. Yeah. She got assassinated. Just trying to fight for the right thing.
Yeah.
Not even looking out for just for herself, but for her other people.
Absolutely. Trying to make a change in the world.
Yeah, man. And that's fucked up, man. I want to know if her, like the family.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder where the family is today. I would love to know
if they carried the legacy on. I mean, it'd be good to know.
Yeah. But there's no closure there. They know who did it. They have witnesses, but
oh yeah, whoever they had on trial was definitely the people that did it. They just didn't get convicted.
That's fucked up.
It's really fucked up.
Yep. So that was my story of LMA Wiggins.
LMA Wiggins. Rest in peace to LMA Wiggins, man. What we're gonna do is we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, it's my turn to tell you guys some fucked up shit. So stick around. All right, and we are back. Fran, my affirmative murder this week is the story of the Monroe Massacre.
Mm.
Okay. My sources were NBCNews.com, a couple of local newspaper articles that I found from Georgia where the story took place. And so here we go. In 1946, Roger Malcolm, who was 24 years old, was jailed after allegedly stabbing and gravely injuring his former employer, Barnett Hester, a white man, during an argument. A wealthy white farmer named J. Loy Harrison posted bond for Malcolm's release on July 25th of that year. So Harrison was taking Malcolm, his wife Dorothy, her sister May Dorsey, and May's husband George Dorsey back to his farm when he says a mob of 20 to 30 white men intercepted their car at Moore's Ford Bridge over the Appalachia Trail connecting Walton and Oconee counties in Georgia. Harrison, who is identified in an FBI report as a former Ku Klux Klansman and well-known bootlegger, was not hurt in this ambush. He told authorities that he didn't recognize anyone in the mob. So I just want you to just put a pin in that. While the mob held Harrison and the two women at gunpoint, Roger Malcolm and George Dorsey were bound and dragged down an old dirt road. Then one of the women allegedly recognized a member of the mob. He cried out, "Get those damn women out too." Both couples were tied to a tree while the mob lined up like a firing squad. The four were shot hundreds of times in broad daylight by unmasked men. Murder weapons included rifles, shotguns, pistols, and machine guns.
Mm.
The Tuskegee Institute called the brutal attack a lynching. Despite an intense investigation by the FBI and GBI agents, they came back with a quote stating, "The best people in town wouldn't talk." This was according to then Georgia State Patrol Major William E. Spence. Apparently, the climate of fear and the threat of retaliation discouraged law-abiding citizens from cooperating with the investigation, although they had an idea who was responsible. For months, the FBI investigated, and more than 100 people reportedly testified before a grand jury. But no one was ever indicted in the deaths of Roger and Dorothy Malcolm or George and May Dorsey at Moore's Ford Bridge in Walton County. The mass lynchings received national coverage and generated outrage. Large protests and marches took place in New York City and Washington, D.C. against the lynchings. President Harry S. Truman, for the first time, directed the Justice Department to investigate the crimes under federal civil rights law. He created the President's Committee on Civil Rights in December of 1946. The Truman administration also introduced anti-lynching legislation in Congress, but was unable to get it passed against the opposition of the white Southern Democratic bloc in the state.
Wow.
I'm telling you, it always comes down to some shit. Everything is like people say no to some shit.
That's crazy.
Like the thing we're talking about in Alabama about the school thing, it was like, I'm voting against this.
People saying no for years.
Yeah.
So one person just was like, All right, yeah.
Yeah, all right, fine.
Fine, just let him have it. Yeah. Shit.
That's crazy, man. Yeah. On July 28th, 1946, a funeral for the Dorseys and Dorothy Malcolm was held at the Mount Perry Baptist Church. George Dorsey was a World War II veteran, so his coffin was draped in an American flag. The funeral was well attended by national news media, although many black people stayed away out of fear. Because it's like, they could bomb this church. I mean, especially when you talk about being actually in the time.
Yeah.
Because we can all do things that we go, oh, this reminds me of Emmett Till. This is reminiscent of this.
Yeah.
But when you're in 1946 and you're like, that happened last week.
Yeah.
They threw a fucking bomb through a church last week.
Yeah.
So the last thing I want to do is go to this church where all the news media is talking about these Klan members mob killing these black people. They might get us all in there and blow this fucking church up.
Yeah.
They were like, listen, we feel terrible that those two couples got murdered. We send our condolences, but I just don't feel comfortable being in a church full of black people with a political protest behind it right now.
Yeah.
I feel like we are not safe there. And that's sad.
Yeah. And he served the country too.
And he served the country. He was a war veteran, man. The same kind of war veteran that at this time would come back home, get spat on. People tell you, wow, take your uniform off. You don't deserve to wear it. From people who work at a mill.
Yeah. Who don't got the balls to go.
To never. So one black man who attended the funeral told journalists from the Chicago Defender, they are exterminating us. They're killing Negro veterans, and we don't have nothing to fight back with except our bare hands. FBI agents heard allegations that Harrison was a member of the Ku Klux Klan and had bailed Malcolm out of jail to turn him over to the lynch mob. Harrison made contradictory statements as he changed his story, at one point saying that he had been directed by someone whose name he claimed not to remember to use a less traveled road on the way home. The police suspected that he may have been involved in the plans for the lynching. So basically, the guy, Loy Harrison, who bailed Malcolm out of prison after he allegedly stabbed a guy, the general rumor is, and I believed it from the go, because it's like this white farmer with no connection to this guy shows up and bails him out and picks up him and his wife and his wife's sister and his wife's sister's husband, picks them all up, and this white guy just so happens to get pulled over by a lynch mob. They just, you know, so they say allegedly, but it's very likely that this guy, Loy Harrison, set them up. Because why else would he bail them out?
Right.
Just out of the kindness of his heart. He wanted to bail out this guy who stabbed a white man in 1946. But the FBI did an investigation, and they allegedly found proof that he was in the KKK and that there was a good chance. That was like being in the YMCA back then. Like, you had a YMCA membership.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I pay my dues, and, you know, we have nice little barbecues and stuff, you know, nice meetings and do s'more Sundays. But I really don't go to the meetings like I used to. That's a casual conversation between two white people in 1940. So are you still in the Klan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going to meet tonight?
Me and Mary haven't gone to a meeting in about 6 months. We really just been so busy, but maybe this summer. I hear they're opening the pool back up. So, you know, probably do a Klan swim and, you know, be a nice little fun thing for the kids to do.
They got like a fucking, what's the thing they do in birthdays? What do you hit? The pinata?
It's
like a black
those pinatas are crazy. Let's not even speculate on the kind of pinatas that they have at KKK birthday parties. Oh, the most offensive things.
Just like a black person hanging from
mammy dolls and, oh man, with the big red lips and, oh, it's crazy. News of the brutal killings and the subsequent cover-up swept across the nation. The New York Times alone ran 43 separate stories in 1946. This incident and two others enraged President Harry Truman and helped lead to historic changes. The creation of the first ever Presidential Commission on Race, desegregation of the military, and passage of anti-lynching legislation. Yet this civil rights milestone was nearly forgotten in Walton and Oconee counties for a long time. There was neither mention in local histories nor on historical markers of this incident or tragedy or lynching or any of the other more powerful words that should be used. There was, however, race-baiting graffiti sprayed on the bridge where the murders took place. The victims, including World War II veteran George Dorsey, even laid in unmarked graves until in 1997, Georgia citizens led by Richard Rich Rusk established the Biracial Moores Ford Memorial Committee to commemorate the lynching and work for racial reconciliation. They have conducted a number of activities, including restoration of cemeteries where the victims were buried, erection of tombstones at the previously unmarked graves, conducting education about the events, and setting up scholarships in the names of those who died. In 1998, they held a biracial memorial service on the anniversary of the attack. Almost 50 years later, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution retold the history of the Monroe Massacre after an eyewitness finally came forward. While hiding nearby, Clinton Adams said he saw the killings as a 10-year-old boy. In 1992, he identified four men as shooters, all of whom had died. Although no one was charged, Adams' testimony in 1992 rekindled interest in the case, and probably if he had not come forward, there probably would not have been the Biracial Moores Ford Memorial Committee in the first place. Mm-hmm. He re-sparked interest in the case, got attention back on it, more stories were written about it, and the interest peaked once again. In 2001, Governor Roy Barnes officially reopened the investigation with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. By 2006, the FBI had re-entered the case. It was among a dozen cold cases related to the civil rights era in which the Department of Justice was investigating. In June of 2008, as part of this, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, or the GBI, and the FBI searched an area at a farm home in Walton County near Gratis and collected material which they believed to be related to the lynching. While the FBI did question an 86-year-old man about the lynchings in 2015, it closed this investigation, unable to prosecute any suspect. And I guarantee you that that person, if he wasn't involved, he knew something.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, it's been fucking 60 years now, so we just can't, like, prove that this 86-year-old man, who probably is a little senile, we can't prove that he did it. But he probably had something to do with it. We found some evidence, some, you know, he lived here his whole life. He was in the Klan, found a robe.
Charge him anyway. He was part of it. He's also, he knows something if he ain't do it. Yeah. Charge his ass. He ain't got that much to live anyway.
But my whole thing is like I read an article about they started a trial for a guy that's accused of being he worked at one of the Nazi death camps.
That was going to be my good vibe.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then I won't even bring up my point.
Okay.
I won't even bring up my point. Well, I can still bring up my
you
point.
You can still bring it. Yeah,
so my point is, like, let's say somebody has Alzheimer's or dementia,
yeah,
which my grandfather is going through right now. Yeah. He still remembers me, thankfully. He remembers people. He just doesn't remember, like, stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's on a loop. It's like something that happened in 98. He'll be like, you know, I went and did that yesterday.
Yeah.
But he still remembers us, right? If he doesn't remember doing something, is it justice? Like, if that 86-year-old man was involved in that firing squad, and he's just a senile, dementia-riddled old man, and he's like, I don't even know who am I? Do you think that would feel good to that person's kids or grandkids to see that old man dragged before court and, like, lost? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that would feel good. I understand that that's justice.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. It just feels like... This is all so late. It's all it will remind me is like,
yeah,
this guy lived a full life so much that his brain betrayed him. This should have happened 40 years ago, 50 years ago. I don't know if that would be a satisfying justice.
Just because he's old?
And doesn't remember. Not old. If you're old, whatever. Fucking Joseph D'Angelo was old.
Yeah.
But if Joseph D'Angelo was like, who's Joseph D'Angelo?
You just don't even remember.
Yeah, it's like.
Probably feel pointless, yeah.
And that's what he tried, actually. He tried that. He tried to act like he was like, oh, what?
Yeah.
But they knew it was bullshit. In January 2018, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation officially closed the lynching investigation, ending the effort to bring the perpetrators of the lynching to justice. No one was ever charged or prosecuted in this case. The Moores Ford Memorial Committee is committed to telling the story, honoring the dead, promoting healing and social justice, and creating a living memorial to the victims of this horrible crime. Since 2005, the Moores Ford Memorial Committee has annually reenacted the lynchings at Moores Ford in July as a living memorial to the victims, which you can look up online. You can find it. It's very powerful, a little hard to watch for me, but, you know, they bring the kids out. It's like a field trip you can go take, and it's like a living art installation. Like, you can follow them as they are pulling these people and calling them names. Like, it's a bunch of actors. Like, you're in a living scene outside. It's really interesting, but it's very intense, and
and powerful, but you can look it up if you'd like to see footage of it. The effort was initiated by Tyrone Brooks, a civil rights activist and state legislator. In recent years, most of the participants have come from Atlanta, about an hour away. Bob Kane, one of the white actors in the lynching reenactment, is a descendant of Leo Frank, a Jewish man lynched by white vigilantes in 1915 after the governor of Georgia had commuted his death sentence to life imprisonment following his wrongful conviction of charges of rape and murder of a young local woman. Now, wow. I don't know. It says they commuted the sentence from the death sentence to life in prison. So he was still in prison. So I don't want to say like he was definitely innocent. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting. Like this guy feels like his grandfather was the system did him wrong, too. And so he's now learning about this incident that took place, this miscarriage of justice, by really feeling the emotions of it. And they do a whole meeting before with all the actors. Like, look, if you're doing this and you're feeling the emotion and you cry. We want people to really feel that. Don't hold it back. Really feel it. It's really powerful.
So he was killed because
this guy's grandfather?
Oh, his grandfather was killed.
It was grandfather.
Oh, okay.
His grandfather back in 1915 was killed by vigilantes. So I don't know if he had been let out. I don't really understand. The way that they described it is as if his wrongful conviction was overturned and he was released.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
But they said his death sentence
So that person thought that he should have been dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was converted to life imprisonment following his wrongful conviction of
charges. And he went after his grandfather?
But in 1915, he just was some guy's dad who was in prison or whatever.
Damn.
So, yeah, man. So that was the story of the Monroe Massacre. Rest in peace to Roger Malcolm, Dorothy Malcolm, May Dorsey, and George Dorsey.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man.
That's fucked up, man.
Yeah, well.
God, served his country. It was fucking...
Those always get me. I mean, any of the stories that we do always get me. But I never at any point in my life thought I was built for signing up to enlist in the military, yeah. any branch. So I respect anybody who's signed up to protect this country, right? Yeah. And I have my stances on, you know, I think that, you know, we live in an empire and, you know, you're going to do the bidding of some dude who wants to make money. Like, I understand. But these people do leave and they're like, I'm going because I want to protect my family and provide for my family and I want to protect America. And that's a great feeling to go do something with. I have my own thoughts about who's pushing the buttons and sending these poor people to go and do these things and die for their country and what they stand for and all that. But signing up to do that job takes an incredibly brave person.
Absolutely.
So the idea that somebody would do that and then come home and be spat on and disrespected and not allowed the same benefits that other veterans get.
Yeah.
It really boils my blood. It makes me incredibly angry.
Me too.
Because it's just like, it's the most American thing you can do is sign up to protect your country.
Yeah.
And there's what they're saying to you is, I don't give a shit what you do. This isn't your country. Yeah. So I don't know why you don't walk around thinking you get to feel some sense of pride for your country. That's fucked up. That's super fucked up, man. Let's get into these good vibes, man. That pissed me off. That's right, folks. It's time for some good vibes. Let's uplift things and bring the spirits up to a high place as we head on out for this episode. Fran, my good vibe story this week is one that's been in play for a couple of months. I've been hearing updates about it, but it's finally come through, and the story is about a California family whose prime beachfront property was returned back to them after the land was taken from their family in 1924. So nearly a century.
About that.
Yeah. I've been hearing about it for like a couple of months. I've been hearing the brewings, but it happened. It took place. So nearly a century after their beach resort was wrongfully taken from two black business owners, Willa and Charles Bruce, the California governor, Gavin Newsom, signed legislation that will enable Los Angeles County to return the beachfront property to their descendants. Governor Newsom visited the Manhattan Beach property on September 30th to sign the law. Championed by Senator Stephen Bradford of nearby Gardenia, with the Bruce family members looking on. The measure, sponsored by the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors, authorizes the county to immediately begin the process of transferring parcels of what was known as Bruce's Beach to the family's descendants. That was named after him? Damn.
Well, so I think this is dope. But like, was it vacant?
How did they take it in the first place?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a different. That's a story for another day, man. I don't know. That's crazy. I don't want to get into.
Kick motherfuckers out.
Yeah, I don't want to guess. I don't want to guess because I could be wrong. The Bruces purchased the property in 1912 and established a popular resort serving black residents that was a fixture in the community. The Bruces endured years of racist harassment, however, and Manhattan Beach city officials ultimately seized their property through eminent domain in 1924, saying they needed it for a park. So there's the answer to that, actually. Okay. So we don't even need to speculate anymore. They just needed it, Fran.
Yeah.
But it's we're a profitable business. We're doing well here. Well, we need it. So get out. And that works.
It's not yours.
Yeah, back then, yeah. Earlier this year, the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors voted unanimously to right the historical wrong by moving forward with a land transfer to the Bruce family in motions co-authored by Supervisor Janice Hahn and Supervisor Holly Mitchell.
Wait, they explained how they took it away from them?
Yeah, that's what
I'm talking about. How did they get it back? Like now, like
through probably the power of social media and obviously there's legislation that took place, but the story came across where it's like, we're the Bruce family and our beach was taken. Now this is a slippery slope.
So it's just a strip of land.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like they probably have a deed that says like, you know, the layout of how much of the land they owned, and it's like we want.
I thought
that
it was like land and some properties on it. It was like
there might be.
Y'all got it. That's what I'm saying. Like y'all got to go.
I don't see that's.
That's
I don't
crazy.
That, that's but and that's why it's a slippery slope because we are living on native land.
Yeah.
So I'm sure these native people are going to take notes of this. Like, okay, well, y'all giving land back?
Yeah. I want all
of Wyoming, all of Oregon, all of everything. I want it all.
They could.
Nothing. That's what I'm saying. Like, this was a little gesture.
Yeah.
But that conversation, when you really want to have it, is people being like, well, what are we going to do? Like, give it back to them? It's like, well, yeah, I mean, that would be the right thing to do. And now they have precedent saying, well, so you guys can do the right thing sometimes.
But they didn't do that for all black people. I'm still waiting on my 48 cent meal, man.
Well, you aren't waiting on anything. But, you know, yeah, but hey, Mr. Raj.
He might have something down a couple Evanses.
Oh, a couple, you know, yes. Let me take that back. Because, yes, as a descendant.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, yes. The debt doesn't go away.
Yeah, man.
Because you're... The person who the debt was given to is gone.
Yeah.
And this is evidence of that.
What if we own a whole bunch of shit and we don't even know.
Hey, man.
That's crazy.
That's America, man. For some.
Yeah.
For others, they'll be like, this family business has been around for 200 years. Why don't you pull your bootstraps up? I've been making six figures since I turned 20 years old because my dad owned this company and his dad owned it and his dad owned it. And you're like, well, my dad owned the company. It was a beach resort. Yeah. And then the government came in and just was like, you don't own this anymore. So... Bye.
Yeah.
But it's good vibes, Fran. It's good vibes, though. Governor Newsom was quoted in saying, as we move to remedy the nearly century-old injustice, I thank the Bruce family, Senator Bradford, Los Angeles County Supervisors, and all of those who fought to keep the legacy of this place alive and deliver this long overdue justice. This bill passed the legislature unanimously and with overwhelming community support. SB 796 shows that it is never too late to address the injustices of the past, said Senator Bradford. The city of Manhattan Beach, County of Los Angeles, and the state of California owe a debt to the Bruce family. So, yeah, all right. Those are big words, man. And all I'm saying...
He's on a little bit of a run, ain't he?
Huh?
Ain't he on a little bit of a run, Governor Newsom?
Yeah, he's been doing some cool stuff. Yeah. He's been doing some cool stuff. But he started off the year rubbing people the wrong way because he was like, hey, man, stay home. And then he was out at a restaurant. Yeah, so, but anyway, we're not going to... Anyway, good job, Gavin Newsom, on this one. Congratulations to the Bruce family. It's long overdue. And all I'm saying is, when them natives pull up, because they are going to pull up, and have been pulling up for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
They're going to pull up after this story, and I would like to see some of that same energy. I'm not saying... realistically, we can't just be like, well, Wyoming, all the white people in Wyoming, get out. But... people that really say, like, this was I lived here. My grandmother lived here.
Yeah.
People are going to come with those receipts of, like, this was my grandmother's house. So I want it back.
I don't blame them.
I don't blame them either. And I hope that they get the justice that the Bruce's got. Yeah,
especially in Wyoming.
I don't have it. I'm using Wyoming as an example. I don't even know if there's a ton of, like, native there's native land everywhere. But I'm just saying Wyoming because it's, like, big and green and open.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go there. I'm just saying.
You don't go to Wyoming? Mm-hmm. Kanye West? Well, he loved Wyoming. Okay. All right, bad example. Sorry. All right. Anyway, Fran, your good vibe story is what?
So I don't have a good vibe story this week. The one I was going to read, I'm not going to do anymore. But
okay,
the good vibe is that I have that touches every, it gets me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We might have brought this up before, but the videos of people coming home, doesn't matter if it's from the military.
Sure.
Or
prison.
Prison. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. The one I seen specifically was a kid was at like, I think they did like a little lunch or whatever.
Okay.
That was coming home.
Saw this. Yeah, okay.
And he was like writing something. Then he sat down and was like, whatever.
And the dad sat next to him.
Yeah, he looked over like, what the fuck? Hey, wait.
Yeah.
Like, dad?
So dad snuck in and sat down next to him when he wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Just cut him off guard. Oh.
Yeah.
I almost broke down. It gets me all the time, man.
Oh, yeah. When I need to feel, when I'm in a space where I'm like, I'd like to feel today.
Yeah.
I look up people coming home videos. It's usually military videos, and they always play that fucking, that P. Diddy song. I'm coming home.
P. Diddy?
Yeah, that's a Diddy song.
No, it's not.
That is, man. That's Last Train to Paris.
What am I thinking about?
I don't know. I think you're thinking of See You Again.
Oh.
That's another one. They play that one too.
Yeah.
It's been a long day.
Yeah. That's
but either one of those, they play those, either one of those, and then somebody's like, Dad? And they run, and I'm like, oh, I start crying. So when I need to feel, that's my go-to. So yeah, I don't know if that's good vibes, but sometimes it feels good to feel.
Yeah.
It's emotional, but you're happy. Happy tears.
Yeah.
Happy emotion. Sometimes you're so happy you cry.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are good vibes. So look up one of those videos today, folks. Now, friend, this was big. I wanted to save the last words. I don't have any recommendations today. So this episode is the last episode in our pod loft.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I am moving. Our house sold. So applause. Round of applause for us. Our house sold. We packed up the house. We are moving this weekend.
Yeah.
So this is the last episode of the podcast in this space where
the
whole inception of the podcast name was created here. Yep. The first podcast was recorded here.
Yep.
We won't be doing episode 200 from here.
Nope.
Unfortunately, I looked up the dates of the closing and everything, and we just won't be here for the 200th episode. But we've recorded 190 something episodes from this house, from this podcast studio. We've had an incredible run.
Yep.
We've had some incredible opportunities that arose from this house. And so I just wanted to take an opportunity to thank people, right? Because there's a lot of things that happen that if they didn't go that way, who knows where we would be right now.
Yeah.
So first thing, I want to thank your fiance. Give it up for her, because she got pregnant. And then we were supposed to be roommates. So that changed everything. Who knows where we would be, who I would have dated, any of that kind of stuff, how things would have gone.
Well, I thought about that. And if you would have met Sierra, then you would have been like, hey, man, I got to move. And
but who knows? Maybe I don't meet Sierra if we move in together. Maybe I don't hang out with the same. Maybe we start hanging out with new people.
I guess.
You just never know. Everything. It's a butterfly effect, man.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, you step on a fly, you change everything. President gets assassinated. You just everything.
What?
That's how that works. The butterfly effect, man.
All right,
small change here can lead to a big change there.
Okay.
Right. So thank her. I want to thank you, man. Give it up to you. You rode with me on this journey. We came up with this idea.
Yeah.
You come consistently.
Yeah.
Every week you've been coming. We've been doing this for like 4 years, man. It's been a hell of a run.
Yeah.
And it's been longer than 4 years. I mean, we've been friends since we were 12 years old, man. It's just been a hell of a run, man.
Yeah.
You've been with me the whole way, and I appreciate you for
that. Sir.
I want to thank Sierra because she was the first fan of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, still the biggest. I would be hard pressed to think that there's a bigger fan out
there.
She's
in the intro of the.
Yes. Oh. Yes. That is her voice at the beginning of the podcast. So I want to thank Sierra as well.
Yep.
This chapter of my life has been an incredible chapter. It's been a beautiful run. This house was a lot of funny memories came from this, and a lot of, I mean, I found a passion here, man.
Yeah.
I
want to get some thanks.
I'm sorry, man. Go
He's
ahead.
Taking all of
I'm
taking
sorry,
all
man.
The shine,
I'm,
man.
I'm sorry, man. Did you sell a house? Did you sell a house?
I don't got to do anything.
Sell the house that the thing is in? That we're doing the thing?
Yeah, no, but I was going
to let the drummer get some.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Again, I want to thank the listeners, and I want to thank, I want to let people know that we had everything. You know, we've been doing this podcast for a long time.
Yes.
Everything is not. You know, everything's not sweet and everything's not roses. We had some hiccups people don't know about the behind the scenes shit that we go through.
Absolutely.
As buddies and, you know, as best friends, we can go and talk to some things out. We had we headbutted a couple times.
We got some scuffles.
Yeah, but
we
know how to, I think about our friendship, we know how to talk about it. We know how to get past it and we know how to grow and move on from it. And And nothing is ever sour between us because we know how to talk about the stuff that we have issues with. But just shout out again to all the listeners and shout out to everybody that's been a huge part of the podcast. I had Sophie was born before we started this podcast, right?
But barely.
Barely, yeah.
Yeah, she was just born.
They almost one half kids.
Yeah. Sure. We've definitely made some announcements, but we definitely announced Max on this one, on this podcast.
Yeah,
and here. Yeah, man. Life has changed a lot in 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of memories were made, and it was a beautiful run, man.
Yeah.
I am incredibly thankful. For people, there have been people that have been reaching out because, you know, I let people know that, you know, me and Sierra are no longer together.
Yeah.
And I appreciate people reaching out to ask if I'm okay. I'm in a good space, man. I'm really happy. And I think that going forward, you know, she's one of my best friends, so I would love to keep it that way. But this chapter has closed.
Yeah.
The house is selling. The pod loft. Goodbye to the pod loft, obviously.
Yeah.
But we'll find a new place and we'll make some more memories.
Yeah.
Life is chapters, man. And this chapter is closed. And chapter 30 is next year. We're going to Vegas. And I'm really just excited about what's next in life in general.
Oh, you're talking about Vegas.
Yeah, you're really excited to go to Vegas. But I'm excited to go to Vegas too. But I'm just talking about just looking forward to
it.
Just in general.
Oh, I ain't thinking that far.
Yeah, but yeah, no. It's a lot of positive stuff on the horizon, some stuff we can't talk about. And maybe not even happen. But I'm just happy to be a part of the journey, man.
Yep.
And so again, thank you, man. It's been a hell of a ride. And let's keep on riding.
Yeah.
I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans. And we'll see you guys next week.
Deuces. Such a lonely boy. Heaven knows I might never sleep. Trouble in my soul. Hey, I've been praying. Life can be training. Oh. Hey, we're late. Try and keep falling. Oh, I'm ashamed. Hated what I will see, and nobody knows. So I go.